meeting back up?
Exactly.
Yeah, we can shout.
Want the departmental request public works road commissioner Sardini, please.
Morning, board. Tom Dean, director of public works. Here to talk about the road conditions up around the dam removal sites. I have handed all of you have a series of 8 photographs. The first photograph in each pair was taken in February of this year, with the one immediately following it taken last week. Part of our mitigation project during this process was we drive the dam site twice a week, and once a month we take videos of the road. Those photographs are taken from those stills. As you can see in each set of those photographs, the road condition is in far worse shape than you would expect it to be after only 7 months. The work that we did complete earlier this year on the lower sections is still holding up fairly well. All the damage that you're looking at is from milepost 10 and beyond. We are aware of this issue, and the fixes that we have in place for the remainder of this year are Band-Aids at best, right? We're going up and putting gravel and grindings into those potholes and rolling them out to provide a stable road surface. We're doing that for a couple of reasons. One, it's too late in the year to try to get asphalt down. Too cold, we won't be able to put it out. Cold mix, what we would use typically in a cold weather situation like this, is not designed for potholes and holes of that magnitude. That will also blow out, and we'll spend a ton of money doing it. So we're down to gravel patches for the remainder of the year until we can repave. That's the road report. That's where we're at.
Okay.
Any questions?
Let's start with Supervisor Chris.
Thank you, Mr. Deaney. You know, looking at the first pictures, it wasn't, the roads were in decent shape. You know, they weren't more stellar, sealed and all that sort of thing. They were in decent shape. So you would say that the wear and tear on it exceeds what would normally have been or what we would have expected?
Yes.
Right. And in regards to the MOU, what role does, in regards to that, do you have?
Well, the amount of spending divided by the MOU is divided between us and KRRC. They have spent a portion of their money, and the county has spent a portion of ours as well. We, county, still has some funds, and we're waiting to hear what the balance is from KRRC on what their balance is remaining.
All right. I would say that the county signed this MOU with eyes wide open, and also with good intent of having these roads. Supervisor Ogden brought this up, but I won't steer in line, but I want to give her credit for it. She said these roads are the legacy for this community, and so I appreciated that. It was a great dialogue of compliments you received from constituents up there for that quote. So, you know, the main thing is to restore these back to as best as possible. And that's really what we asked for in the MOU, that we restore to as best as possible. So I appreciate your constant vigilance in monitoring these roads, doing those sorts of things. Maybe we should kind of track that kind of a little bit if we need to for internal costs.
Yes, sir. Public Works has already set a from the beginning of the project, has set a special code in our traffic system so we can track all dam-related activities.
Like I said, on the bridge, these roads aren't just for convenience or a shortcut. These are the only cut folks to get out, so we want these to be as best. I'm not pressuring you to disturb our discussion.
Yes, sir, and that reminds me, I need to answer your question about the bridge. So the Cocco Bridge, the one that's highest up, runs right by the fire station. Loads have been driven over that from what I've heard. I don't know. I do not believe that they were intended to go up that way. The good news, if there is some, on this, is that is a bonus purple rated bridge, which means it's designed to take very heavy loads, like what you could take over the interstate. So while vehicles have crossed over that bridge that weren't permitted, got there by accident, whatever, it's not anticipated that they could have caused any damage.
We'll still review it and do all those sorts of things.
Absolutely. Yes.
Right. Thank you. The constituents that told me that, I really appreciate it. We'll be happy to hear that news. We'll try to share that tomorrow night. But, and like I said, we'll follow up on that to confirm that the bridge is a little speckless.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Supervisor Roper?
Thanks for your kind words. I appreciate that. And I truly believe that those roads are the legacy that we are going to leave the people that live there. Those roads have been there for a really long time. They were never designed correctly to begin with. And we have to make those roads the absolute best that they can be. And clearly, they are not there. They are deteriorating at a rate that we cannot keep up with them. And it's pretty obvious to me that the county's not going to have the resources or the money to do what we need to do to make them whole. Because they're failing at a rate way beyond what we thought they were going to fail. I've driven up there numerous times, and to me, that's a real public safety issue. And I have a car that can handle potholes, and I feel like I'm going to fall into the middle of the earth when I drive up there. It's not only a public safety issue to the people that live there, but it's a public safety issue to the trucks that are on that road. We've seen issues happen already. And as the weather changes and the work continues, it becomes more and more dangerous every day. And it's a scary thought to think that we can't fix them to a degree that they're safe. KRC doesn't seem to be able to get them fixed. And I fear for people's lives that we're going to have a real issue. Whether it's an environmental issue, something spills, we're going to have dead wildlife on the road, or we're going to have a fatality. And that's a big concern. It's not just about me. It becomes a real issue for public safety. My other concern is, in the end, we're going to take in the shorts. We are going to suffer. Not because we didn't have the forethought to make a stronger MOU. It's because we trusted that the system was going to work. And now, you know, I'm just worried that we're going to land up suffering because this just is falling apart. And we're not going to be able to see our way out of it. And we're working with a corporation that may not do us right. So we're going to really have to fight for this, Tom. You're going to have to help us do it.
Yes, ma'am.
So, how's your working relationship with KRC on this matter?
It's been better. So, the main reason, well, it's hard to know why the roads are falling apart the way that they are, right? And the reason why it's hard to know is because the permitting process for pulling heavy loads up into the work site has not been followed. In our agreement, we talked about getting a global encroachment permit. The reason why we would need this permit is because we have two bridges down there, Dry Creek and Fall Creek. We knew in the beginning of the project that Dry Creek and Fall Creek, both orange-loaded bridges, which probably means nothing to anybody, the bridges aren't designed to take very heavyweight loads like Hopco bridges. The stalling went up. It was incorrect. The stalling was repaired, and we were giving... we had been asking for the calculations on those bridges to show that they could support the weight of the loads that were going across. And we finally received that Friday after months of asking. While that was happening, we couldn't issue an encroachment permit because the bridges couldn't accept the weight. So there's no way of knowing what got hauled up, when, and how much it weighed, which denied the county the opportunity to provide any mitigation for both the bridges and the roads. After this meeting, we're having another meeting, or after the Board of Supervisors meeting, all the concerned parties are getting together, and we're trying to work out something that is fair to the county and all its constituents. If that doesn't work, we have to go into the formal dispute resolution clause in the MOU. I would like to take this opportunity to thank the Department of Fish and Wildlife, because they're the ones who, I believe it was the pressure that they applied that finally got me those calculations on Friday.
Is this too little too late?
Public Works' opinion and the Road Commissioner's opinion is that both those bridges and the road need to be completely replaced, and it should be on their dime.
I would agree. And I would support litigating whatever it takes to make that happen. Because, again, I'll keep reiterating this throughout whatever dialogue we have with this. We were told there's a never-ending pot of money to do whatever is accomplished on this system to make it whole again, opening it up. So the county should not be holding the bag on any of this. It all should be reimbursed. And the good neighbor policy would require it. I guess somebody could say, well, your roads aren't any good anyway, right?
Yes, sir. But so here's the deal with that. Yeah. Everybody here knows the score, right?
Yeah.
Those roads weren't great when we started.
Yeah.
If you look at the before picture and the after picture, that's 7 months. I've got asphalt missing off the road. It's turned into bare dirt. They weren't perfect, but they were a lot better than they are right now.
Agreed.
Now, if they want to put the road back in and put every pothole and alligator crack that was on those February drawings, fine. That's cost prohibitive, right?
Right.
The cheapest solution and the fairest solution for everybody is to put a whole new road and repair both bridges.
You have my support on that. And I'm not, Supervisor Chris, I hear what you're saying. Best possible condition, but I'm for, if I borrow my neighbor's lawnmower, at least what was instilled in me is return it better than you received it. And that should be what's going on here as well.
That's my definition of best possible condition.
Yeah. Well, mine is better than it was. So.
No. You're putting it down. I'm in agreement with you. We have to have it.
Yes,
thank
you.
So, not only will I support it, I'll continue to demand it from here. So obviously there was alligator cracking in it before.
Yeah.
But with the exacerbated alligator cracking, it's pretty clear to me that the subsurface was never designed or constructed to support heavy loads.
Yes, sir, that's correct.
The question I have is, what kind of relationship do you have with the California Water Board? Because what I see setting up here, during the winter months with heavy hauling, we're going to get cited for discharges into the river.
I do not have a relationship with the California Water Board. I haven't done any work with them up to this point. Doesn't mean I can't make one.
I think that would be prudent for us to entertain that thought at this point and shift the blame where it belongs. I know that we come back to the owner of the road, but this isn't standard operating procedure in my mind. I'm going to go back to the question I asked earlier. What deficiencies or corrections have you had to wrestle since this project began?
The biggest problem that we ran into is the hauling of overweight loads with no permit. I understand the FERC zone rules, and we tried to make this permitting process. We went out of our way to make it as easy as possible, offering up a global permit.
But those are state law, aren't they?
What's that?
The overload permitting process?
Yes, sir, but they have to work their own deal with state, right? Once it comes off state highway system, goes on to Cali highway system, they have to deal with our permitting process. So we try to make it as easy as possible with a global permitting system. Anything that wasn't an ultra-heavy load, right? Ultra-heavy loads were going to have to be done separately. They just gave us a schedule, right, of what they were bringing across and how much it weighed and when. I never got the when. And so we've been denying permits at this point, but the equipment's still getting up there, which means it's being hauled in without a permit over bridges that may or may not be able to accept the load.
So when they approach you for a over heavy load or some other kind of permit that's overweight limit, do they have to get the same CHP escort as my loggers do on state roads?
That would depend on the exact configuration of the truck going in, but yes, we often do make that a requirement. But like I said, there's an end of garments issue.
Okay. In my estimation, we're dealing with gravel road now, not a paved road. It's just a big gravel in it. But I see some, should we ever get rain in that neck of the woods? It looks pretty prone for the inside ditches and such not to work well and channel across the road and start eating through that, those holes and potholes.
That has happened in a few spots already, and we have gone up to mitigate it and try to pull some ditches where we can.
Yeah.
If you remember, the entire strategy of this was trying to hold off so we had more money at the end of the project, right?
Yeah.
And I still stand by that as an initial strategy. But not being able to put in any mitigation efforts when a heavy load was going in did that road a lot more harm than anybody anticipated.
Well, I need to know specifically what the deficiencies are in the MOU going forward that aren't being covered if there are such, so we can have a discussion here. And then the KRRC, my expectation with the MOU was similar to Supervisor Cox. So at the end of this project, I thought I had a really nice. And that's my expectation of the state. It's your showcase project. You think we're going to make it look so?
Yes, sir.
So, my own benefit, I had to work for AT&T. That was my territory all the way up there to Copco. The roads were never great to begin with. I looked at some of the projects we've done over the past years. I believe we used whatever the government money was from I-5. Hornbrook out to repave. There was a project that was done. I don't know. I wasn't the supervisor then, but it was by Bogus Creek School, I believe. There was a, you know, brand new section. I think I stated in the very beginning, at least when everything's said and done, at least the people deserve an upgraded road system, upgraded from what we have been maintaining, which we haven't been maintaining. Do the best we can. I mean, these cracks, they're all over them. And North Shore, as you well know, is a dirt road. I mean, I think at the end of the day, the people deserve better than what's out there. The last thing I want to do is see if they get in for tit for tat. I think they should put up the money to rebuild the bridge. At the end of the day, you know, we're going to be stuck holding the bag here. So I want to make sure we do all we can on that front, including going after some state money to rebuild. You know, hey, this state's part, you hold some of this stuff. Let's start from wherever, and then just start putting our own dime in there, because we're going to have to maintain it afterwards.
Yes, sir.
That's where I'm at with that. Any other questions for the board?
One quick one. Why wasn't the permit issued? Or I mean, what was the holdup on the permit?
There is no real holdup on one of those permits. We term them 24 hours, right?
The global?
Well, I don't know why it wasn't applied for. I'm sorry. I cannot answer that question. The original thing was we needed the shoring on the bridges to be up to spec, and then I needed the calculation to prove that that shoring was enough to hold the weight that we were talking about. That piece I got Friday, right? So I couldn't issue a permit for a bridge that I didn't think was safe.
So are there any fines that go with operating without a permit?
You would have to be caught by CHP, and that's a difficult thing to arrange. I've tried.
Okay.
Anyone else in the room? Thank you, Mr. Dean. Oh.
Mr. Dean, can you make sure that copies of the pictures that you brought for your presentation are at the end of this desk for public
to
see?
Okay.
Oh, you put them out.
Great.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they're handed out.
Just
want to
make sure.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Item 7, public request. We've got the California Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Good morning. My name is Morgan Connectly. Supervisors, thank you for inviting us here today to provide an update on the California Inland Sport Fishing Regulations. Let's see here. So we're going to go slide by slide through a presentation here. Some of you may have seen this previously, but we've been doing a fair amount of outreach over the last 6 to 8 months trying to solicit input from various user groups and whatnot as it relates to changes to the upper climate sport fishing regulations. So in any event, like I said, my name is Morgan Connectly. I'm a supervisor within the department working on the climate attorney program. And I know you guys had specifically asked for Brett Cormos to come and provide this presentation. He was unavailable for today, so you got me instead. So thanks for the opportunity. Next slide, please. So we're just going to do, you know, a little bit of project background. I think we'll slip through that pretty quickly. Everybody's very familiar with what's going on here. We've got some outreach and collaboration, the proposed regulatory timeline, the existing regulations, and the 2024 the regulatory goals, context, and options. And so, you know, just to kind of, you know, frame this a little bit, you know, we have anadromous fish downstream of the dams currently, salmon and steelhead, for which we provide different regulations than we do for our wild trout populations, right? And so currently we have wild trout upstream of the dams and we have anadromous fish downstream of the dams when we remove, and there are very different regulations for each of those target species. And then when the dams are removed, now we're going to have anadromous fish penetrating further up into the basin, and we need to account for that change in the regulatory framework. So next slide, please. So again, you know, this is just background. The project will restore anadromy to approximately 400 miles of river and stream habitat, right? We know this. Habitat restoration will be occurring above and directly below the current dam sites. And we do need these new and modified sport fishing regulations to facilitate the repopulation and recovery of native fish populations of trout, steelhead, and salmon. Current schedule is reservoir drawdown will be beginning January 2024, and, you know, deconstruction beginning in the spring thereafter, and we're hoping for anadromous fish passage in the fall of 2024. Next slide, please. So just to, you know, a little background on the area, you guys are all very, very familiar with this, but you can see, you know, the California-Oregon border there, the regulations that we're going to be talking about here specifically today are from essentially the I-5 bridge upstream to the California-Oregon border. And you can see the dam locations there. Next slide, please. So again, like I said, we've been doing a fair amount of outreach. We've reached out specifically to the Rezegini, Yurok, Quartz Valley, Hoopa, Shasta Nation, Shasta Indian Nation, the Karuk, Modoc, Sunwe, and the Klamath tribes. We've reached out to Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, federal agencies as well, NOAA Fisheries, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the county board of supervisors, both to this body here as well as the Trinity County board of supervisors, and both fish and game commissions for the two counties as well. And we offered meetings and coordination calls and presentations and whatnot. And so essentially, you know, and we're here trying to fulfill that request today. Lots of different NGOs and fishing organizations. We've, you know, worked with, coordinated with Trout Unlimited, CalTrout, NorCal Guides Association, the Fly Fisher International, the PCFFA, the local RCDs, and watershed groups and whatnot. We're really trying to hit everybody that we think might have an interest in the changes to these regulations to make sure that we're covering our bases and providing that input, or we're gaining that input. Thank you for the slide change. We did deliver this presentation to the State Fish and Game Commission public hearing. We went to notice in August of 2023. And, we have essentially a three-meeting process for regulation changes in this environment, and we'll be going to what they consider the discussion hearing in December of 2023. That's an opportunity for the public to be able to provide lots and lots of direct communication and input to the commission directly at that December meeting. The department will also be putting forward a proposed alternative at that time, and so that'll be out for folks to be able to consider. And the goal is to have the regulations adopted in February of 2024, after we know that drawdown has commenced and that the project is moving forward. We don't want to implement something too soon, right? So we're waiting until we absolutely know that this sucker is happening this year. And so in any event, we're hoping for adoption in February 2024. And the the hope is that the within roughly 2 week period after adoption, they'll be in effect. Next slide, please. So some just a little background on the existing regulations. We have individual warm water species regulations are in place in the current reservoirs, right? There's trout regs and bass regs and, whatnot that are up there. We have general trout regulations in place for the tributaries upstream of Iron Gate Dam. We do have a special wild trout water regulation that's in effect on the main stem of the Klamath from Copco Road Bridge upstream to the California-Oregon border. So that's a little nuance there. And then downstream of Iron Gate Dam, we have the Klamath River Basin trout, steelhead, and salmon regulations downstream of that. So next slide, please. We're also taking this as an opportunity to provide some consistency across some of the regulations. There are some deviations in terms of a statewide application of wild trout waters, and so we were interested in trying to provide consistency to the wild trout waters, as well as within the lower main stem and tributary regulations. So we're trying to take a holistic approach that's going to consider the entire basin and other statewide implications as well. So, and this will come up in a moment, but as an example, and you'll see it here in a second, as far as trying to provide some consistency, Bogus Creek, you'll see in a moment, is a small tributary of the Klamath that's in anadromous waters that currently we allow trout fishing in. That's the only place in the basin that we allow that. Right, so that's inconsistent within the rest of the Klamath Basin. So we're looking at some potential consistency issues. We do want to provide protection for anadromous salmonids during the repopulation phase, right? We're hoping for a successful project from a fish perspective, right? And so we do need to provide some additional protection there. And we're also looking at some potential closure windows for spring and fall Chinook during the spawning migration and juvenile emigration periods as well, and provide protection for anadromous salmonids and thermal refugia provided by tributaries, similar to what we do currently at like the mouths of Salmon River, Scott River, and Shasta River and Blue Creek, right? We have tributary protection there during a migratory period. So next slide, please. So any initial regulations are expected to be temporary and will be subject to annual revision. One of the things that's nice about the regulatory framework within the Klamath is that it's special, and we have, we take great effort to estimate the number of fish that are in the river and forecast ocean abundance, and then provide a scaled opportunity based on what we believe is available for harvest. And so given that that's the sort of the backdrop here for the Klamath, that means that every single year the Klamath regulatory package is under review on the commission's docket. So we have the ability to kind of tweak this thing every single year moving forward. It's not like a tributary down above an Adjari in some Central Valley stream or something like that that might get a regulatory package once every decade or even less frequently, right? This is every single year we're engaged in the Klamath and rule setting process. So there'll be monitoring and assessment that'll begin immediately after the project and will be ongoing. It's going to be ongoing restoration that will be starting and ongoing. And our goal is to achieve sustainable fisheries for all species as quickly as possible, and we're hoping to be able to provide harvest when appropriate. And we're proposing zero changes to the regulations or the annual process downstream of the I-5 crossing. So everything that everybody's been accustomed to within the Trinity and the lower Klamath downstream of I-5, it's going to be the same. We're not changing it. We're not asking and proposing to make any changes there. So next slide, please. So we've got the habitats divided into anadromous and non-anadromous sections within the state. We mentioned that a moment ago. And we further divided it into main stem habitats and tributary habitats, because that's we do treat those differently within the current regulatory framework. And we have different regulatory options for each identified section, and all options and their components are available to be used interchangeably, right, throughout this. So we're trying to really get every option on the table for consideration. Next slide, please. So here's a a color-coded map of the sections that we're interested in terms of. We've got the main stem section. That green section down there on the lower left-hand corner of the map starts at the I-5 bridge, and it goes up to the Iron Gate Dam location, or what the landmark that we're using in the proposed regulations is the Lakeview Road Bridge. And then there's another main stem section that's in kind of blue there that goes from the Lakeview Road Bridge up to the Copco Road Bridge, which is essentially the reservoir footprint, right? Most of that habitat is currently underwater, and with the exception of Ward's Canyon there. And then the next section is that wild trout section that we talked about earlier from Copco Road Bridge up to the state line. And then we have additional tributary habitats as well, Bogus Creek, Shovel, Janney, Fall, and Scotch Creek. So next slide, please. So this first section we're going to talk about is the I-5 bridge to Lakeview Road section. Next slide, please. So we've got four different options here. Essentially, option one, we would say a closed to fishing all year. Option two, we're talking about a catch and release steelhead and trout and salmon fishery that would occur from August 15th to February 28th. That would be only barbed hooks, maybe used a zero bag. Option three, January 1st to August 14th, two hatchery trout and hatchery steelhead. And then August 15th to December 31st, essentially year-round fishery. That the second block of time would be proposed as a grills fishery, essentially an H2 Chinook fishery, the smaller fish. So that would be a steelhead trout and grill salmon fishery. And then option four would be essentially the existing regulations that are current for today and in most previous years, which runs year-round, segregated in two time periods, one from January 1st to August 14th, where it's two hatchery trout or hatchery steelhead, and then the balance of the year with the grills and adult Chinook fishery under harsh quota management. The next slide, please. So then this middle section here, this is the one where we're going to know the least about, but we have the it's under the reservoir. The habitats can be rapidly changing, and there's uncertainty in terms of what that may or may not look like, and so we have some additional options for that section as well. Thank you. Option one would be closed. Option two is November 1st through February 28th. Only artificial lures with barbless hooks may be used. That'd be a zero bag. It's essentially a catch and release steelhead fishery. And then option three would be essentially a catch and release trout fishery in the summertime, which would run from the fourth Saturday in May through August 31st. Okay, only artificial lures, barbless hooks. And then option four is essentially merging option two and option three together, which would provide a catch and release steelhead fishery as well as a summertime trout fishery. Next slide, please. Okay, and then now we're up into the upper main stem section, which is the existing wild trout waters. Next slide, please. Option one would be closed to fishing all year. Option two, again, is this catch and release steelhead period, November 1st to February 28th. Only artificial lures with barbless hooks could be used with the zero bag. Option three is a catch and release trout fishery, which would run from the fourth Saturday in May through August 31st. Artificial lures, barbless hooks, maybe a zero bag. And then option four is, again, bringing those two, option two and three together to provide more opportunity for catch and release steelhead and trout fishery. Next slide, please. Now, Bogus Creek, we talked about that a little bit earlier. It's sort of a standalone. So we've got a big bubble around Bogus Creek and then a little bubble around Fall Creek, just to the top of the map there. Bogus Creek is somewhat of an anomaly within the basin in terms of it being a small tributary where we currently allow trout fishing. So the next slide, please. For Bogus Creek, we only have two options. One would be closed to fishing all year, and the second option would be essentially the existing regulation, which is the fourth Saturday in May through August 31st. Only artificial lures, barbless hooks, a bag, two hatchery trout and two hatchery steelhead. So that's a trout fishery. And then for the anadromous portion of Fall Creek, downstream of the falls there, we're only providing one option, and we want that section closed. That's the creek for which the new hatchery is going to be situated on, and we don't see any reason to justify and allow a fishery in that section of the river. Next slide, please. Okay, so then we have three additional tributaries that we believe anadromous fish are going to be utilizing, for which we want to craft regulations, Jenny Shovel and Scotch Creeks, and you can see them all called out in the bubbles there. Next slide, please. So for those anadromous portions of Jenny Fall and Scotch Creeks, option one would be closed to fishing all year, and option two would be a catch and release trout fishery, essentially in the summertime. And the non-anadromous portions of the same tributaries would fall under the general trout regulations. Essentially, they'd be open year-round. Okay. So as far as regulatory context, expectation for habitat response includes some uncertainty, right? So we're trying to be cautious. And the expectation for fish population response also has some uncertainty. So, precautions are warranted. And, we're going to learn a lot by the managers and restoration project as the restoration project unfolds. And we're able to gauge some responses and progress. Any initial regulations are expected to be temporary and will be subject to annual revision. I think I talked about that briefly earlier. And adaptive management will be critical and ongoing. Next slide, please. And I guess that's the last one. So I'm happy to take any questions or comments from the board. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. So with the help,